Welcome to Green Talk Radio 1260 KTRC, and this is your host, Farron Dancer, and welcome to the studio on this Saturday afternoon. Green Talk Radio is brought to you by our nonprofit, Unicopia.org, where we really impress on the public the awareness, knowledge, and the sustainability factor for how we're going to move forward in the future. And that also entails the evolution of consciousness so that we're attuned to our natural world and to each other's needs as well as our own. Here in the studio today, I have with me my special guest, Mariel Nanasi from the New Energy Economy. And we're going to discuss some of the interesting and pertinent topics of the day here in New Mexico around the environment. And welcome, Mariel.
Thank you.
Mariel's been on before, and welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you.
I think we were going to start our show today with a quote from Martin Luther King, whose birthday just passed a couple of weeks back. And Mariel, would you just like kind of introduce MLK to our listening audience?
Thank you for having me on again, Farron. On April 4th, 1967, 1 year to the day before his assassination, Martin Luther King addressed a meeting of clergy and laity concerned at Riverside Church in New York City. Denouncing the war in Vietnam, his words speak as well to the challenge that we are facing today of global warming. "We are now faced with the fact, my friends, that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with a lost opportunity. Over the bleached bones and jumbled residues of numerous civilizations are written the pathetic words, too late. Now let us begin. Let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter, but beautiful, struggle for a new world."
Wow.
Quite beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, quite beautiful. And Martin Luther King summed it up quite well all those many years ago. And that's very much where we are in this time and space.
A prescient human being he was.
Very much so. Mariel, I know that New Energy Economy has been very active on a number of fronts politically, and I know with our new governor who's just taken office, there's some issues that have come up that are pretty profound, and I know I think I'd like to start the conversation with the Environmental Improvement Board, I did have opportunity to give public testimony last year at the Improvement Board hearings, and they went on to approve a carbon cap for New Mexico and some other pollution standards. Can you just kind of fill us in as to
where things are? Sure, I'll give you a little background. We filed a petition, New Energy Economy filed a petition over 2 years ago that basically reduced carbon pollution in New Mexico, and we propose to do that. And after hundreds of hours of public and scientific and technical testimony, and economic testimony, the Environmental Improvement Board adopted our petition, and it is now law. On December 6th, 2010, they adopted that, and the rule was filed not only was the rule filed, but there was something called the Statement of Reasons, which is essentially the opinion or the basis which the Environmental Improvement Board adopted as well and explained why they adopted the rules. And they concluded that it was economically and technically feasible. They said that there was overwhelming evidence that global warming exists and that there is a need to address it in New Mexico, and that New Mexico had an opportunity to lead with a carbon reduction rule. And maybe you want me to tell about what happened after it was filed?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the rule was filed, and as per law, a rule after it's filed, unless there's like typo problems or something like that, it must be published in the New Mexico Register. And that is essentially to give notice to the public about what the rules and regulations are for the state of New Mexico. Some industry polluter lawyers actually wrote an email to the governor and the governor's attorney and said, hey, what about if you don't publish these laws, if you don't publish these rules, then they won't be enacted. And the governor and her lawyer basically told a bureaucrat, the state records administrator, whose job it was to publish them in the New Mexico Register, hey, let's not publish this rule. And they didn't also publish any of the other rules that she didn't like. So we filed what's called a mandamus in the New Mexico Supreme Court. And we filed that on January 11th, which essentially said, hey, you have to abide by the law, and the law says that these that filed rules are to be published, and that needs to be done. And we won last week.
Yay!
Yes, last week in a unanimous Supreme Court decision from the bench, the justices found that that the governor had overstepped her bounds, that there's an established process of law. And this is a quote from the chief judge, who said there's either compliance with the law or a wasteland of no laws. And there was some fantastic moments during the hearing when Justice Chavez said to Governor Martinez's lawyer, are you arguing that the governor is above the law, that she can trump the law? And he hesitated for not too long, but said, no, sir, that's not what I'm arguing. But he made this thing up called executive discretion, that she had an executive discretion to not publish the laws. But the Supreme Court found unanimously that that was not the case. And they issued the writ of mandamus against the records administrator, essentially saying, hey, you must publish these laws. And the writ was actually issued on the same day that the case was heard. And so that now in two weeks, they will be actually published.
Well, we know that Governor Martinez did an excellent job of jumping out of the chute with all kinds of questionable legalities around some of her process and how she was dealing with these laws and rules that had been previously passed.
Which is ironic, okay, because she was a prosecutor and she had the responsibility of putting people in jail when they violated the law. And what was one of her first acts as governor was
to violate the law.
And she should have known better.
Well, that was the number one hand slap that's come down since just this 1 month in office. It's been pretty
Correct.
Profound what's been happening. And then there was something with the dairy industry.
Correct.
Who was obviously opposed to, the PIT rule, I think it was one thing, but also some of the EIB findings regarding air pollution. How did that work?
Well, there was some controls that were pollution controls in the dairy industry that were one in a separate, not in front of the Environmental Improvement Board, but in another administrative agency. And that was another rule that Governor Martinez didn't like, and her her at the behest, literally, of lawyers for polluting industries, who she, by the way, got $70,000 from.
That's the dairy industry.
The dairy industry mm-hmm. gave her $70,000 for her campaign. I mean, the campaign contributions from oil and gas and polluting industries and coal were the largest of her campaign contributions, and most of them, by the way, came from out of state. Your listeners should know that most of the money that was raised came from out of state for her. Our case that we won in front of the Supreme Court was dubbed her first political defeat, but she's had a couple since then. And the second one was she refused to to publish the dairy regulations as well as the building codes, and they have all been now required to be published.
Well, in the building codes, given my own background in the building industry, and I did work on some of those committees over the past year or so, that was a real head-scratcher because I actually got an email from Public Regulation Commissioner Jason Marks just last week saying that one of the most profound issues that we're currently dealing with is this pushback against the state codes, and how much federal funding this was going to cost the state if we decided to do an about-face on that. Fortunately, just this past week, the Sierra Club led a legal challenge to get that ruling overturned as well. So that was considered her third major defeat in a 1 month's time. So congratulations to the Sierra Club. Congratulations to New Energy Economy for your efforts in all these legal maneuverings to bring our governor into alignment with how the law works, and just a wake-up call about the fact that she is not above the law. I know from just hanging around the roundhouse a little bit in recent weeks and talking to legislators and people who are very active in that realm that there seems to be, as a result of this major contrast that this new governor is creating, a move towards more solidarity in the Democratic Party. Do you have any overview of that? Have you seen this come down?
Well, I will just say that when Governor Martinez attempted to circumvent the law and the New Mexico Supreme Court, like you said, handed her first political defeats, there was clapping, there was applause on the actual floor of the Senate in the New Mexico legislature. And I think that it seems to me that there's been some shoring up of solidarity amongst the Democrats because they realize that a lot of her decisions are really ideologically driven. They're pretty reckless. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to just get rid of our carbon reduction rule. She wants to get rid of all environmental
rules.
Regulation. This is a problem because a lot of people of both parties want to really maintain the integrity of this beautiful place that we live in.
Right.
And they care about clean water. They care about clean air. And they care about clean soil and healthy soil. And so I think that her actions, she's overstepped her bounds, and people are resisting and are not happy with the kinds of, as I said, reckless efforts that she's making in all kinds of arenas, not only environmental.
Right. Well, and oftentimes the bidding of big business entities that put her in office in the first place, and we know how that all came down. Interestingly, you said that thing about she's functioning from some ideological perspective, which is exactly the accusation she made regarding the EIB board, that they're not functioning in reality, that they're just running with some ideological agenda. And interestingly enough, and, you know, and the GOP always has this great ability to spin, you know. We call them the consummate spin doctors.
I think that what is really true is that there's a wealth of scientific and economic evidence that our carbon reduction rules were based on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she makes this sweeping statement that it's anti-business. That's the farthest thing from the truth. As a matter of fact, I think that these carbon reduction rules will actually put New Mexico in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
To actually, there's a number of reasons why, but one of them is the same carbon mitigation technologies that we need to implement here are the same ones that are going to be needed worldwide over, not only just in the United States. And if we could be, New Mexico is poised to take advantage of that opportunity. Instead of being 40th or 48th in so many other areas, we Right. could lead in the green area. We have the second best solar potential. We have the 12th best wind potential. And we have these labs here who have designed all sorts of fabulous technology, but unfortunately, it's not being manufactured here. It's often being manufactured in China or somewhere Right. else. And we have, we have an economic opportunity here, and that will create jobs in this area. As a matter of fact, all the jobs that have been created of late in the last 5 to 10 years, the healthiest sector is the green sector.
Well, and that's exactly the opposite spin that the governor has been putting out there, that anything really green or in terms of supporting a new green economy here in New Mexico is anti-business.
Which is ridiculous.
And it's completely ridiculous. And by the way, you mentioned the labs, and I just want to bring up the point that the labs have confirmed that there is this thing called climate change.
Yep.
And this is a fairly entrenched conservative, aspect of our government. So it's like when they're coming out and saying it's real, come on, who are these people to say it isn't?
And Sandia Labs just came out with a report about 6 months ago. It's a phenomenal report, and you can Google it and find it really easily, and talked about the risk. If we don't act proactively to address the risk of climate and to monetize our risk, we are, again, going to suffer economically. And there was a report out of UNM and the University of Oregon did a joint study on climate, and they estimate that it will cost every New Mexican household $3,400 by 2020 if we continue with a business as usual scenario. And those costs are mainly related to increased hospitalization because of asthma and wildfire costs. And that is to, putting our firefighters at risk. We see less, the drought is already happening. You just saw it just on the front cover of the Albuquerque Journal, I don't know, 10 days ago or something. Right. And they mm-hmm. talk about the serious drought. And even with this latest snowfall, we've had really cold weather, but we have not had the kind of snow that we need, because New Mexico relies on snowpack. We get our water mainly from the melting of snow going into our rivers, and I think something like 90% of our water comes from that. And we are already in drought conditions here now, and so we need to address this and mitigate these problems.
Well, and then interestingly, just on based on this topic of climate change, several weeks back, Big Bear, which is a ski resort just east of Los Angeles, claimed the largest snowpack in the entire world at their ski resort just a number of weeks ago, 17 feet. And so, given the drought conditions that we're experiencing here, and then all of a sudden, Los Angeles, which is sort of in a perpetual drought and getting their water from every other place, all of a sudden has 17 feet of snow in the mountains just east of the city. So with that said,
we're like going from both, floods to scarcity and not any kind of, uniform.
Right. Things are dramatic and becoming more so. We're gonna just have to take another break here right now on Green Talk Radio. This is Farron Dancer, and we'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Farron Dancer on Green Talk Radio 1260 KTRC. And I'm here in the studio with my guest, Mariel Nanasi from New Energy Economy. Welcome back. Hi, Mariel.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It certainly is. Thank you. You know, I do enjoy having this opportunity to share with the listening audience the particulars of what's really going on with our environment and with our government, both state and nationally at times. And I consider it an honor to be here speaking of these issues. Before the break, we were discussing some of what our governor has been at least attempting to perpetuate since her coming into office at the beginning of the year. And fortunately, there are some legal stopgaps. There is a movement within the Democratic Party and within the active environmental community to put a halt to some of these out-of-bounds maneuvers that she's been trying to perpetrate. I know there's something else that came up in the news in recent weeks, too, and that's Martinez putting forth an executive order for the State Highway Patrol to be able to pull people over. Of course, they would say that, you know, it doesn't give them an excuse to pull people over, but if they have pulled people over, they can ask for proof of citizenship, and we know that our previous government here in the state, at least the governor's office, had put out a bill that kept that from happening. Now that's she's attempting to overturn it. What have you heard about how that's going at this point?
Well, I think that this is another one of the governor's reckless ideological, you know, she's looking for a headline rather than any substance. Where is it? What's behind this? It's a violation, I believe, of people's civil rights. I think it is racial profiling. And I think that also this is an affront to public safety. It means that I know that a number of progressive Democrats really who have, again, come together and said, hey, wait a second, this doesn't help mothers who are dropping off their children for school or women who need to call the police in a domestic violence situation or someone who's been hurt and needs to go to the hospital. They should be detained and asked about their immigration status. Are they supposed to, everybody has to carry around their passport? Lots of people who are citizens don't have passports. And it's just, it's an affront to all of us, I believe. And I mean, there's a number of other kinds of things. She makes these statements without any facts. And that's what I think is so reckless about some of these moves by the governor, whether it's the carbon rules, and she says it's anti-business, but has she said named one fact about how it's anti-business,
right?
or this executive order on immigration, has she given us one real reason, any objective reason? No. As a matter of fact, I think that, again, it's there is no real facts behind this move. Or you look at the film industry. She wants to just cut. She's like, I want to cut this. I want to hunt for waste, she says.
Right.
Meanwhile, I loved that expose. Again, look at the facts underlying it, and it just and it belies what she says. And the fact is that there was $200 million investment in New Mexico in the last 10 years in the film industry. And how much money was brought in?
Third largest industry in New Mexico,
and it was $1.2 billion. That sounds like a pretty good investment to me. You put in $200 million, you get back $1.2 billion, and that does not include their spending of restaurants or at hotels or movies or anything else that they go to. And so she ignores the local multiplier effect. And the same thing with the carbon rules. She says it's anti-business, but in fact, they're you know, she makes these enormous statements. They're sort of fear-mongering tactics, but then there's no basis underneath.
Well, and I also know here in the city of Santa Fe that the city council and the mayor had been proponents of an ordinance that really, you know, curtails this thing about asking for proof of citizenship and, you know, removing the risk of racial profiling. And at least we have a progressive leadership within our locality here whereby this issue is being looked at from a common sense perspective.
Yeah, but even the there are legislators who are promoting a bill to make it safe for for everybody to go and seek emergency services without being racially profiled.
Just to move along to another topic, and that would be a little bit our good friends at PNM. I like to at least bring some shed some light on what they're up to. And boy, I've been getting some real disturbing feedback from the solar industry people that I know, from public regulation commissioners. You know, they are one of the true monopolies here in this state, and they just have a way of, you know, bitching and moaning and getting what they want. And now we're going through upcoming another round of this kind of behavior. And you and I talked before the show about some of what goes on with the coal-burning power plants, especially in the Four Corners area. And when I gave testimony at the EIB hearings, I heard expert testimony from people from San Juan County in terms of it being the sixth highest CO2-emitting county in the entire United States, not to mention all of the myriad of health issues, health-related issues that result from the coal-burning power plant. You mentioned 51% of the carbon emissions in New Mexico come from that one plant alone. Wow. So what is PNM doing to clean things up?
Well, I don't know if people know, but when we turn on our lights here in Santa Fe or in most parts of New Mexico, that electricity is generated from two plants in the Farmington area. One is called the San Juan Generating Station, and the other one is the Four Corners plant. The San Juan Generating Station alone emits, as you said, over half of all carbon emissions in New Mexico. And all in terms of the United States, 40% of all carbon emissions come from coal plants. This needs to be a target, and it needs to be a target to close the coal plants for a number of reasons. And one is that PNM has known about carbon emissions for 40 years and has done nothing about it. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, there was 60,000, 60,000 air quality violations that were levied against PNM. So if half of them weren't untrue or unfounded, we'd be in serious problems. And what happened was is that they were fined only $7 million, which is about 10 cents an air quality violation.
10 cents per violation?
Yeah.
I wonder if they can afford that, folks. And look for your rate increases, because they're going to go after that dime in a big way.
But exactly. Well, right now, they're asking for a 21.2% rate hike. Not one of them. Not 1 cent of that is going towards renewable, which I think is corporate malfeasance. I mean, you know, they have a monopoly status because they have to provide everyone electricity who needs it. And in turn, there was something called the Public Regulation Commission, who was supposed to regulate them. Now, unfortunately, PNM has wielded so much power in this state that they have what's called externalized their costs. So when they pollute the air with carbon emissions or other kinds of emissions like nitrous oxide and SOx and all sorts of other, chemical particulates that are terrible for our air and cause haze, that brown layer that you see that's ruining our sunsets, and that's really ruining, affecting the pollution. Is so bad sometimes, the air quality so bad in Bandelier National Monument or in the Pecos Wilderness. I mean, it's affecting tourism, but most importantly, it's affecting our health.
And the health of our citizens,
but particularly in the San Juan Basin area. The asthma rates there have skyrocketed, have gone up 16% in the last 10 years alone. The water is so filled with mercury that the San Juan River, there's signs there that say, beware, do not drink this water, do not fish in this water, because the fish contains so much mercury poisoning. And that is the water stream. That's the water source. water source that is used for agriculture in that area. And so agriculture means that's how our food is grown,
yeah.
And it's so contaminated that it's contaminating our food.
And I just want to, you know, kind of alert the listeners. Many of you may know, but PNM is a publicly traded company on Wall Street. They are not a New Mexico company. All the profits, which is immense, that are PNM creates here in New Mexico, all those dollars go out of state to shareholders all over the place. And they are not really putting much back into our local economy. In fact, all those ever constantly rising utility bills that they're cashing in on, that money is not staying at home. So I just want people to be aware that we're under the influence of this monopoly that does not really care much about the environment. I was talking to Claudia from Positive Energy just a couple nights ago, and I was hearing about PNM wanting to charge a new solar access fee, folks, 8 cents a kilowatt hour, just so you can give them the honor of taking your renewable energy and feeding it back into the grid. And they're going to charge you 8 cents a kilowatt hour to use that excess power. This is about 180 degrees from what we were hoping for. I know there is an EPA hearing coming up in Farmington later in February regarding nitrous oxide and this thing called Best Available Research Technologies, or BART. Would you like to explain that, Muriel?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, because PNM is so poorly managed and has not really had much corporate foresight, they've known about the immense carbon emissions that that they emit and that we pay for literally with our own health and the pollution that they spew into the air and into the water and into our soil and the contamination. And instead of acting proactively, like some other utilities have done, in fact, and started to transition years ago to renewable energies, whether they're wind or solar utility power or most importantly, decentralized energy. What they have done is they maintained one of the dirtiest coal-fired power plants in the United States. And so EPA is really going after coal because it is the main cause of global warming emissions in the United States. And so they're having these hearings all around the country, but targeting the worst coal-fired power plants first. And they are having a hearing in Farmington in mid-February, and they are trying to implement control technologies that would address the nitrous oxides that are spewing into the air and causing haze and asthma rates to rise, which costs New Mexicans in terms of increased emergency room visits and also clinics and doctor health visits.
You know, you mentioned something about hair samples from cows up in that neck of the woods. You want to describe what that is about?
Yeah, there was this amazing... We had hundreds of people come out and testify in front of the Environmental Improvement Board in order to get the carbon emissions reduction rule passed. And what happened was there was this beautiful... I would say mid-50s Hispanic man with tight jeans and a cowboy hat and sun-streaked face and cowboy boots and really tight jeans. And he came up and he said, you know, I'm a rancher. And my grandfather was a rancher. And my great-grandfather was a rancher. And he said, I am proud to tell you that I can turn a calf into a fat cow. But something's happened. And what's happened is that I've taken my, I took a hair sample from 60 of my cows and 58 of them, I took this to the vet and 58 of them were found to be so toxic. It was literally off the charts. And his eyes welled up with tears and he looked at the members of the EIB, the Environmental Improvement Board, and he said, you are taking away my life. You are literally stealing my livelihood, or PNM has with this the amount of
fallout
pollution
from the plant.
Exactly.
And the cows are eating that grass that's loaded with mercury and every and other damn heavy metal imaginable.
Exactly.
So
all the poisons. And he said, I want my grandchildren to be able to ranch on this land and to live in a tradition of honoring and living with the land. And it was just powerful testimony from a rancher like him. And then we had other testimony from doctors who said, have you ever looked into a child's eyes when they are gasping for breath? That's the kind of testimony that we had. And we had it from all over, literally all over the state. And they were white people. They were Native Americans. They were Hispanics. Then they came and said, this is our life and this is our future. And I wanted to just mention, we had a lot of youth. And they looked at the Environmental Improvement Board and said, you know, I'm 16, I'm 20, I'm 24. And I want to have a life here in New Mexico. And the people of the generation before us have really left us an enormous
kind
legacy.
Kind of a gnarly legacy.
Exactly. And one that we have to clean up. And we want jobs in the green economy. Jobs planting trees and jobs with mitigating carbon pollution and jobs in the solar industry and jobs in the wind industry. And it's amazing. Like the wind training research institute down in Tucumcari in the south, GE has agreed to hire every single graduate of there for the next 3 years. So there is the possibility, and it's emerging right now in New Mexico, of job creation. I will just tell you that in Colorado,
91,000 jobs, I was hearing?
Yeah, in 2007 alone, the renewable, in the renewable energy and the energy efficiency industries raised $10.3 billion, created 91,000 jobs in Colorado, and it's 70% more jobs than oil and gas. So this is really the area that we need to focus in. There's an economic opportunity here that we would like to take advantage of.
Well, and I've reiterated this in my past shows, and I'll bring it up one more time, and that is there's examples throughout the world where countries are moving towards new green economies, and they are creating massive amounts of new jobs and moving their whole economic sectors toward renewables, toward sustainability. And out of it is coming job growth and a healthy economic trends for the future. So when we hear this soundbite from our new governor about green jobs and renewable energy and things that are good for the environment don't equate to good business for the state of New Mexico, take a breath, folks, because this is completely contrary to the reality of what's going on in other places.
You know, these jobs are family-supporting jobs, and that's what people want. They want meaningful work, and they want to have family-supporting jobs. And I believe that with less pollution, we can create more jobs.
Well, and then on a positive note, because our time is winding down here on Green Talk Radio, the youth, the future of our nation, of our state, of our city, these are the people that are going to inherit our future, and the choices we make right now are going to be the ones they live with, because they're the future. So what have we seen in a positive light regarding a youth movement? And I know I've had people come up to me in their early 20s saying, hey, I listened to your show on KTRC. And I'm like, really? Well, that's terrific, because, I don't want to be just preaching to the choir over here. But listen, we're kind of winding down time-wise. So I want to thank my guest, Mariel Nanasi, from New Energy Economy. And I want you to tune in every Saturday at 4 p.m. here on Green Talk Radio 1260. This is Farron Dancer signing off.